Well, I'm happy to be here with another candidate for the legislature, Warren Keough. Welcome, Warren.
Nice to be here, Mike. Thanks for the invite.
I'm going to ask you a series of questions. I'll give you a little background, as we do with each candidate, and just remind people that we are dealing with a common theme, and the common theme is how do you work with others? And the reason we've chosen that is that through observation, what we have found is that there seems to have developed, both nationally and here in Alaska, a more than usual political polarization. And that's resulted in a gridlock at times and decisions made by use of power that isn't always backed by a majority of citizens. So here are the five questions. Go one at a time. The first one, how do you view the present quality of state government? And there's just a second part to that. What is your approach to working with others of different perspectives to ensure quality government?
Well, I suppose if I were totally satisfied with the quality of the current state government, I wouldn't be running for office. But so I am dissatisfied, and that's one of the several reasons that prompts me to run. Your question about getting along with others, is it? Or how do
right.
you...
How do you work with others of different perspectives to ensure quality government?
Well, I think, there's always the requisite politeness and civility that you have when dealing with others. I have the experience of being on the Matsu Borough Assembly, and prior to that on as the officer, mostly as chair of the Chicklin Community Council. And so when you meet with folks in your community or your peers are elected officers or officials, I think a civil discourse is always prerequisite. You have to be polite. You have to be respectful. You have to make sure everyone has a chance to say what's on their mind or what their beliefs or values or priorities are. And even if they're very much different than your own, we tolerate that. We accept that. We should respect it and work together in a common cause to reach the best possible outcome we can. I mean, I don't think it's that hard. We don't do very well at it sometimes, but we certainly could do better.
Okay, well, thank you. The second question, how would you describe ethics in government and the money often connected to the issue? And perhaps the further piece to that would be, what would you specifically do to ensure a good ethical atmosphere?
Well, these are not the usual questions, Mike, that I...
we dare to be different.
Oh, well, so far, you're doing it differently. Ethics. I don't know where to go with that. But money, you mentioned money, and it certainly is part of the equation, and it's become extraordinarily and painfully clear to me, especially running for office at the state level, that you have to have money to play the game. Or for purposes of getting the word out, whether it's for signage, whether it's for radio ads, TV spots, any kind of advertising, transportation, paying for gas to get from one place to another. Running for state office, particularly in a district as large as this, is not inexpensive. It's very costly.
Well, maybe there's a piece here which I've asked others help in answering the question. Election laws, like they have in several other states, are designed to allow candidates to raise small amounts of money with petition gathering, for example, and have it matched with public funds. Do you support changes to the way we operate in terms of obtaining monies?
Well, that sounds – I'm not familiar with the process and how they do it outside, but that sounds like a – without giving it much thought, a reasonable way to do it. I don't know the best way, but there's got to be a better way than what we're doing now. It's one of the Some sage political advisors say that, you know, the only two functions of a candidate at a race at this level is you basically have two functions. One is get your name and your message out there, spend half your time doing that, and the other half is raising money. And if people are like me, I find it extraordinarily difficult, if not possible, to get on the phone and say, "Hi, I'm Warren Keogh. I'm running for office. Can you send me some money? Because I'm the best thing since sliced cheese." And so there's got to be a better way to do it. I haven't had time to think about that. I'm just scrambling as we end the last few weeks of the campaign.
Okay. Thank you. Third question. What are the most serious environmental problems you see needing to be addressed? And along with that, what do you see as a state role in finding a solution to those problems?
That's a big question. The question is how to restate it.
What are the most serious environmental problems you see needing to be addressed, and what do you see as a state role in finding a solution to those problems?
Well, perhaps just the biggest general issue that we have is ensuring that we care for the environment, the landscape, the fish and wildlife that we all need, we all want, we all, one of the reasons most of us live here for, that we keep that intact as we develop and as the economy grows. And, you know, we all know this is primarily a resource extractive state. So as we grow, population-wise, economy-wise, and otherwise, let's keep our environment healthy as we grow and develop. I think one thing we need to do is make sure that we have the rules and the regulations and the laws in place to make sure that we do it right. You know, let's be proactive about this. I just by coincidence, over 25 years ago, I had worked for a long time at the Anchorage Fire Department. And just as a side note, I've been a long time Valley resident, some 35, 36 years, but for nearly all of that, I was a long distance commuter to work in Anchorage. Some 25 years ago, I was laid off from the Anchorage Fire Department as a firefighter that preceded by a month or two the Exxon Valdez oil spill. So while I was in the laid off status, I had the experience of spending several months in Prince William Sound in the cleanup there. So there's a extraordinary example of what can go wrong when you don't have the rules and regulations and laws in place, or even the ones that you do have in place. They work on paper, but realistically, practically, you can't respond to an accident that happens, or and we didn't prevent that kind of a tremendous accident from happening, but when you see the side effects from a major spill, which is one of the things that we need to be concerned about, and I would say tangentially, especially in the Beaufort Sea or the Chukchi Sea, some of the offshore drilling, that's where a cleanup or response would be much more difficult than it was in Prince William Sound. Those are the kinds of things that we need to be mindful of.
Okay, thank you. The state of Alaska has chosen to not participate in an expansion of Medicaid as offered by the federal government. What is your understanding of government's role to make sure every Alaskan has access to health care along with education about healthier living and early treatment?
I know that the governor has rejected our participation in the Affordable Care Act. And I think there are some costs associated with that. But fundamentally, I think every Alaskan should have the right to some basic human health care. So I would like to revisit that. And I think there are a lot of people that fall within outside the guidelines. So the people are stuck now without any kind of they don't have the option to have health insurance by their employer. Their incomes are less than or more than makes them that make them eligible for some kinds of health insurance. So anyway, the it bothers me that we would, when we have an opportunity to make sure everyone is covered with health insurance and get quality health care, that there are a lot of people, some by some estimates, 40 to 45,000 people in the state of Alaska that do not have and cannot afford health care, health insurance.
Okay. Last question. Many observers suggest that the next few years will see a decline in revenue that will put increasing pressure on the state's budgets, especially the funding of education as well as basic services such as transportation, infrastructure, and public safety. How do you see the legislators contributing to solutions for matching funding and needs?
Well, this is a huge problem, probably the single most important issue that the legislature and our next governor are going to have to take up. Currently, we are facing a rather grim picture in the next couple of years. We have revenues, which we all know come primarily, 90% of which come from oil. The number of gallons, the number of barrels coming down the pipeline is diminishing. The value of those, the price of oil per barrel is falling. The last time I looked, it was $87 a barrel. Just a few months ago, it was $110 a barrel. So we have this, we have shrinking revenues. And we have increasing capital and operation budget costs. This past year, we had a nearly $2 billion budget deficit, a record-setting deficit. The year before, it was about $1.5 billion. We also had a deficit the year before that. So we are basically spending away our savings. In the next couple of years, we'll reach the point, if we continue on at this pace, we'll either have to tap the permanent fund or we'll have to find some other source of revenue. Some people have suggested an income tax. Some people have suggested capping the amount of the of a permanent fund payout. None of the options are fun to consider given our past history. So this is a, this is probably the single most important issue the legislature is going to have to face. And I would suggest one way to limit the damage would be to, one, we need to make some decisions here. We need to prioritize, for example, capital projects. We cannot, it is, we do not have enough money in our savings accounts or our permanent fund, which is now $50 billion, to build everything that we want. We cannot build everything. The anticipated cost, if we go ahead with a large diameter gas pipeline, is somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 to $20 billion. This is in the hydro project. Cost estimates now are $6.5 billion, but it'll probably be approaching $10 billion if we go forward with that. Another approximate $1 billion for the Kinnick Arm crossing. We cannot afford to build all of these projects at the same time, so we need to prioritize the ones we think that are the most important and maybe put some of them on hold or some of them just cancel them altogether. So we need to take smaller bites at the capital at capital projects. So I would suggest, as an example, we've tossed considerable amount of money into the Susitna Hydro project, I think approaching $200 million on a project that has, in my view, little likelihood of succeeding. We went this route 25, 30 years ago. We put a lot of money into it. It didn't pencil out cost-wise. And we canceled it, so that money went down the drain. And I think we're have a little bit of history repeating itself here. I did want to mention education, though, which is a significant operational cost that we have in the state of Alaska, as is health care. In this case, I think we've gotten a little bit off the rails here. There's, without getting in the weeds too much, the one of the ways that we have funded in the past, and there's a complex formula on how we fund public schools, but it's called a base student allocation. So part of the formula that we have for the state transferring money into the public school system is on this dollar amount. Well, the dollar amount has been flat for some time. The legislature bumped it up ever so slightly this last year. But it can't. It's not keeping up with inflation, and the long-term effect is our public schools are going to be less able to provide the quality of education that we have now for the future. It's And I think tied with that is the efforts led by my opponent to further diminish and defund public schools with an errant attempt and a failed attempt to amend the Alaska Constitution in a way that it would allow public monies to be spent for private and parochial schools, something that's explicitly disallowed in the Constitution, the Alaska Constitution. So I think we need to be careful about misguided attempts to defund public schools, especially when the argument is made that we have inadequate choices in public schools. That's the argument I've been hearing, and that's one of the reasons for pushing this forward. But the fact of the matter is, in the Massasoit School District, we have an extraordinary array of choices. We have the traditional schools, brick-and-mortar schools. We have home schools. We have correspondence programs. We have technical vocational schools. So the argument that there is no school choice is a hollow and false argument. There is a multitude of choices, including all our charter schools. We have about 10 public schools under the public school system that are charter schools, everything from Waldorf schools to foreign language immersion schools. So there is no shortage of choices for parents on what kind of schools they want to send their kids to. So, but public education is a big issue, and as is the budget, which are two of the issues that I'm concerned about and take exception with the position of my opponent on.
Okay. Well, thank you. Do you have any other last comments, topics that we have not addressed that you'd like to talk about for a bit?
Well, a couple of things. One, I would like to make people aware, which most people are not, as I go door to door in areas north of Palmer and Wasilla, or whether it's in Delta or Valdez or wherever, that the size of this new district, Senate District E, is a byproduct of the gerrymandering that happened here in the last few years. So we have this large, odd-shaped district, approximately the size of Indiana, with communities very disconnected in ways geographically, economy-wise, and otherwise. So this new district includes places like Whittier and Delta Junction and Talkeetna and areas north of Palmer and Wasilla and Glen Allen and Fort Greeley and Delta. So it's this huge area with people residing in communities with very different interests and concerns. So that's a bit of a challenge. So one, it's good for people to know who they're tied to politically or legislatively, their representatives, elected representatives, are going to have to address the concerns and issues of people that live far apart and have very different ideas on on what government should do. I guess I would also just like to mention a bit about myself for those that don't know. I have a very diverse background. I've been in Alaska about 41 years. My background includes being a soldier. I'm a Vietnam veteran, spent a couple of years in Vietnam before I wound up in Alaska, kind of by accident. I've been here ever since. I worked as a long time as a paramedic and then a firefighter, earned a graduate degree along the way. I had a second career with the Fish and Wildlife Service as a researcher and a writer and a paralegal. And then when I was elected to the Matsu Borough Assembly, I left that and thought I was all done with politics last October, but at the urging of a variety of people across with various political stripes, a lot of friends encouraged me to get back into politics. So here I am. I would also mention I'm a family man. I've been married over 36 years. We have three sons who we homeschooled part of the time. They attended school in Sutton Elementary and Glacier View School. They all graduated from Palmer High School. And fortunately for my wife and I, they all continue to reside in Alaska. So that's a good thing. And finally, I guess I would like to say that If anybody wants to learn a bit more about me, I've entered the era of social media. I have a Facebook page, and just today I think we clicked over 600 friends or followers, and that is facebook.com/electkeogh. That's K-E-O-G-H. And we also have a website at keoghforsenate.com. That's keoghforsenate.com if you want to learn more about me. Or you can always call my cell phone number, 355-1357. So 3 weeks left to go in this race. I would ask people to consider my opponent and me, and please vote come November 4th. It's whoever's elected will be your state senator for the next 4 years. I guess that's about it. Thanks very much, Mike, for giving me the opportunity to pipe up here on Big Cabbage Radio. Thank you.
Mike Malevsky here with Warren Keough, a candidate for the state senate. Thank you very much, Warren.
My pleasure. Thanks again.